And it's KVC Arts Now on KVCR Arts and Entertainment, as well as the people in Blaze's providing it. I'm David Fleming. On this edition of the program, we'll hear once again from Dougie Poole. He's in the world of alt country and Americana and has a performance in L.A. rather soon. First, though, if you've ever been to Disneyland or even Chuck E. Cheese or many other places, really, you've seen his work. I'm talking about Garner Holt, a San Bernardino native who set up shop in Redlands designing and building animatronic figures and more, with some of these serving as educational tools. Here's KVCR's Joel Morales with more.
Welcome, Garner.
Oh, glad to have you here. Welcome to Garner Holt Productions.
Thank you so much for having us. It's really cool here. You started your company from your parents' garage in San Bernardino when you were just 17 years old. What inspired you?
Yeah, I did. I started in the garage. That'll be 48 years this July 25th. I was inspired by a trip to Disneyland. I basically had not known much about Disney and what they had done. I was about 12 years old. My parents took me to Disneyland to see the Haunted Mansion, which I'd seen on TV. I liked all the Monsters and Munsters shows and everything else. And when I heard that was available, I wanted to rush to see it. I told them literally on the way home, I said, I'm going to build the things at Disneyland. And 48 years later, we build the things at Disneyland.
So. Oh, that's really exciting. I heard that around that time, you put together a haunted house at the San Bernardino Mall. What's the story behind that?
Well, you know, I had a little haunted house in my backyard. It was my haunted mansion. I had to try to start right away recreating what I saw at Disneyland. So it was basically a little shack.
For friends and family?
Yeah. I had an article in the San Bernardino Sun, which is the newspaper for San Bernardino. And they put a little article out and my parents were shocked that there was this full page article about Garner's haunted house, which is basically a little shack with dirt floors, you know. And we had 400 people show up for Halloween.
Wow.
And it was a big success. So I got a call slip one day when I was in school, in junior high school, from the mall and said, we heard you had this successful haunted house. And is there any way you could build something for us for Halloween? And I said, absolutely. That's what I do. I'm a haunted house builder.
That's great. And how long did that run for?
Probably 5 years.
5 years. Oh,
yeah,
very
and,
cool.
About in the middle of that, I got calls from other malls and I started doing things like in Mall of Orange in Orange County.
Oh, wow.
And some other malls. And, you know, I started doing some Christmas displays and things like that.
And this is when you were 17?
Yeah. My parents had to drive me to work. Actually, I was less than that. Yeah. I was before I was even 16. I was doing the haunted house before I even had a car.
It was your destiny.
No, it was. Yeah.
How do you keep up with technology and what does the future look like? How can that bring more jobs into the IE?
Well, I mean, technology is the key to what we do. Basically, an animatronic figure is a combination of art and technology almost equal to create the illusion of life, we call it, the illusion of a living being, whether it's a bird or a snail or a horse or a dinosaur. You know, it's a challenge to make something look realistic, and that's kind of the magical thing that we do is to create figures that are actually kind of almost like illusions in a sense. You know, it's a bunch of parts of metal and plastic, but they come alive and they look like they're alive. And that's a challenge, and it's something we really have fun with. And technology we keep up on constantly, looking at new opportunities and, you know, things like 3D printing and the advent of all the computer technology and AI and all these crazy things we try to incorporate in our products to our great advantage, you know. And as we grow, then it creates opportunities for employees in this area.
What does AI look like in this field?
There's a lot of AI used in art and design. We have a parrot, we call it Superbird. He's able to even walk across the top of his sign. We're working on you'd be able to actually talk to him and say something, and he would respond to you his parrot voice and answer questions and talk about the company or what's the temperature today or, you know.
Right.
You
know? Oh, that's really interesting.
So we're trying to get more interactivity with figures. When they look super, super real, you want to be able to walk up and talk to them. Right. So that's what we're doing.
Now that you have Garner Holt Productions, creative design, education through imagination, and the Garner Holt Foundation, all in the Inland Empire, how do these organizations keep you connected and give back to the local community?
As we have grown, that's where we created Education Through Imagination, which is the division that does the educational products and Animaker Spaces, which are modern day shop class in a sense. We sell these to schools and using animatronics as a hook to get kids into STEM and STEAM. Education has become very important to me. I love the concept of having kids get excited. And when they walk through here on tours and they walk out with a smile on their face and say, I want to work here someday. That really got me hooked on the education part of it. Kids that are underserved and foster kids and things that can't afford to pay for it themselves. They get their own toolkit and they get a way to build a bird and they learn about things.
Which brings us to the Songbird Mini Kit. Tell us about it and what can students take away from it?
The Songbird Mini Kit is a great little kit that we've had so much success in schools, bird camps and things like that. When they start out, I think they might be a little afraid because they're going to build a bird that's going to talk. But then as they roll through it, they end up realizing that, yes, I can do this. I can do the electronics. I can do the mechanical. I can put this together. I can do the art. And it starts to bring out things, I think, in them that you wouldn't normally maybe have the chance to see.
And what age range is the Songbird Mini Kit designed for?
I think we've had kids in elementary schools in third or fourth grade all the way up to college kids. And even adults want to build this thing. We have a great program right now going, which is a Kickstarter that we're trying to get more high production level of this so we can make more birds so they can be out to more people and across the country.
Do they need any prior experience before building the kit?
No, not really. This is something they've never done. They've never worked with mechanical electronics or coding or experienced how animatronics work and how the art in it and sculpting and painting and all of these things. And they might be a little bit afraid at first, but it's like, no, you can do this. We're going to show you that you can do this. And they do it and it's successful. And they're like, wow, you know, they've achieved something. They're proud of it. They show their parents something that they've created that's really cool that they did all by themselves.
So a lot of positive feedback.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's been fabulous.
How can students get involved and get a kit of their own?
The Kickstarter is going to help us get rolling, as I say, into a high production level of birds so we can get them out to more people. We have so much faith in this and we know that it's such a success and kids are loving it and adults and teachers are loving it. So we're really anxious to get this out into the world in a greater way where we can provide more of these in quantities.
What's the best way for people to find out more about your work and the foundation?
Well, if you go to our website, garnerholt.com, that will give you access to a couple different portals. The foundation is one, the education through imagination, where we do the animaker spaces and, you know, all the educational things. And then there's the main site, which is Garnerholt Productions, where you can look at all the different things that we've done, animatronics and things, and kind of experience what we do here. That's all on garnerholt.com.
So what is a message that you give to kids that are out there that went to Disneyland or Knott's Berry Farm or anything out there and they see animatronics and they want to get into it?
You know, I didn't have a lot to begin with. I didn't have a lot of money and I basically didn't have any college education. I basically did this on my own. And I think that, you know, I might be a tiny example of something that if you really dream of something that you want to do, you know, and you forge ahead and you just never, ever give up. You just decide this is going to be what I'm going to do in my life. Just never give up. I've run into tons of obstacles. I've had all kinds of reasons to not continue. And I've just said, nope, I'm going to make it work and go for it. Now, everybody's not going to start an animatronic company. That's kind of crazy. But there's a lot of people that want to work here that are here now that love to do what they do. They're engineers. They're plastics people. They're people that are running machines. They're people that are designing. A lot of them start out going to school to become mechanical engineers, electrical engineers, plastic mold makers, you know, sculptors, artists. There's about 50 different careers in this building. And if you get to the point where you're good at a lot of these different things and you say, I want to work in animatronics, there's opportunities in theme parks, there's opportunities in companies like ours. Go for it. Decide that's what you're going to do and just go for it. Never give up.
Never give up.
That was KVCR's Joel Morales in conversation with Garner Holt. And the Kickstarter they were talking about has been given a slight extension. Go to garnerholt.com for more, including how you can give to the Kickstarter. You're listening to KVCR. I'm David Fleming. Going now to a musician KVCR's Jessica Greenwell introduced me to, who has a show in Los Angeles rather soon. Here's Dougie Poole and one called Los Angeles.
September comes, I'll make my move. I'll change my email, lose my phone, I'll shave my head and buy new clothes, and let those Santa Ana winds just blow away. So, oh, computer blue, there I recruit.
Los Angeles. This was Jessica's first experience with you and your music, and it coincidentally, it was mine as well, the song Los Angeles. I saw Los Angeles and I thought, hey, here's that one that talks about you moving out here, and sure enough, it's about you not moving out here, wanting to, but not. Is this fully from actual experience then? Again, you, now really your experience this close and then not. And then you name some reasons in there as well.
I don't think I ever really got as far as renting a U-Haul and driving, but something sort of like set the date in my mind or set the intention and then just sort of forget about it or other things would get in the way or give up on it or something like that. And actually, it occurs to me, a connection I hadn't really made before is that sort of feels a little bit in the spirit of what's going on that the other tune you're talking about, having a sense of feeling tuned into something and then it's sort of slipping away.
Los Angeles, that's another one that just propels a person. I've yet to figure it out. This one, the opening riff, you're hammering and then moving up on the fret, hammering, moving up. And then I still have yet to steal it or figure it out. But really, that caught me. And it feels like one of those things that you discover that's like, oh my God, I'm going to save this. This needs to become a song. That was the impetus or the vehicle for you even writing or continuing. But that one struck me.
I actually remember that very well. You know, for a long time, that song was in a major key all the way through. And I don't know, it felt like it was missing something. I even went so far as, you know, I recorded it in a major key and taught it to a whole other band in the major key, and it just didn't feel right. I don't know, I put it down for a little while. You know, it's a funny thing because a lot of people liken that introduction to Jolene by Dolly Parton.
Oh, okay.
I get that a lot, you know, yeah. And it does sound pretty similar, but what actually inspired me to do it was there's some Glen Campbell tune that also has like sort of a fast finger-picking thing like that, and that's sort of what inspired me to try it. I think when I first recorded it, I recorded it slow and then I sped it up to see how it would sound, and then I took the time to learn it.
Wow. Well, it was a cool sound, and again, it's something that a person just hears that sound that propels them into hearing the tune, and then just really cool, just chug-a-chug kind of rhythm that goes along with it, which pulls a person in anyway. Los Angeles. Going back to music and conversation with Dougie Poole in the area soon. Let's check out the title cut from his album, Rainbow Wheel of Death. Go to a few from Rainbow Wheel of Death. Let's talk about the title itself, Rainbow Wheel of Death. I read that it's actually a reflection of society or a reflection on society not being able to move forward during uncertain times. Was this pandemic related? Feeling stuck like that? We didn't know, none of us knew where we were going to go.
Yeah, I mean, it must be. You know, during the pandemic, I took a job as a computer guy, like I was a coder. I just spent so much time at the computer. That wheel is kind of one of those things that you see all the time and you see it so often that you start to forget what it means or what it even is. I think it's related to the kind of work I was doing during the pandemic, how I spent my days. It seemed like the symbol that had kind of mystical and magical power, even though it's on a computer.
Yeah. For people who don't know, they've seen this. They just maybe never heard it called that. The Rainbow Wheel of Death. On a Mac or Apple, it's that wheel that keeps on appearing to spin and spin and never stop when you're just wishing your program would load. I'm sure there's a PC computer version of this as well, but the Rainbow Wheel of Death, it's a very attractive title. I would think that people would be inclined to pick up your recordings based on title alone. Something good to look for, something good to love.
I've seen the plague of locusts, the plague of lies. Notions split right down the middle. Ain't that nice? Oh, but nothing on this earth can make me smile anymore. Nothing on this earth can make me smile.
Nothing on this earth can make me smile. Okay, so first of all, stylistically, yeah, it has less over-the-top or apparent effects, something you could play on the radio right next to any folk players. Were you looking at a stylistic shift, or is this just you decided to quite purposefully put in a different sound than some of the more processed effects that you have on a lot of your music?
I think the kind of natural sound of that record came from sort of what I was talking about. You know, I've spending all my days on the computer, and those effects, that's like incredibly labor intensive computer work. When I was working my day job at the computer, you know, kind of the last thing you want to do after a long day of work is sit back down at the computer and start computer programs. You know, I think I mentioned on White Ass Highway, I wrote all those songs just kind of like piecemeal, and most of these tunes I wrote just on a keyboard or a guitar. All the processing that you're describing on those other records, that's sort of like built into the songwriting process for me. But on this new one, the songwriting process was a lot more kind of traditional on a guitar and a piano. And so it made sense to record it with a band. The effects just weren't part of the inception of the song in the way that they are on some of my other things.
Before we leave, Nothing on This Earth Can Make Me Smile, the lyrics, you're naming off all these wonderful things around you, but then following with that statement of nothing on this earth can make me smile. Now, at one point, you add the word anymore. So nothing on this earth can make me smile anymore. Is this you, Doug, at a point of feeling just so weighed down? Or is some guy that's just so sour, he'll bring it down no matter what?
No, I think it's my way of describing a way that I feel sometimes. A way of describing feeling maybe a little broken, or I don't think of it as much as like an outward thing. It feels kind of much more like an inward thing for me. People have asked me about that song and if it's true or whatever. Yeah, no, it's just a way of describing a feeling.
It's almost the reverse then. It's not, here's all these wonderful things, but nothing can make me smile. It's more like, I feel like nothing can make me smile, but now look around me. Here's all these wonderful things. I need to look at that song in reverse now. Okay.
Make me smile. I don't.
I just really have to ask about this one. This is another on Rainbow Wheel of Death. High school gym comes from not a dream that you had, but rather a dream that you sometimes have.
I haven't had it in a while, but you know, it's kind of all out there in the tune. I had this dream where, it's not the same dream, but I still have it. I dream a lot in that gym. You know, it's my high school gym. It's a place that no longer exists. The building got torn down. So it's kind of this weird place that really only kind of exists in my dream. And I go there, it's just full of people who don't exist anymore. I find myself in that dream space. I used to go there a lot. It's been a while. I can't remember the first time someone asked me solve time or something like that. It's what they asked me to do on my dream. I usually can't do that. it's a dream that I have.
Well, now the video that you have accompanying High School Gym is basically thumbing through a yearbook. And then in some places you've changed the picture to have your mouth moving with this person's high school picture in the yearbook as we hear the lyrics. Now, you're not doing this with every photo as a person goes through the pages, so I'm wondering if the ones you altered are indeed the ones who have passed.
No, you know, that's not my high school yearbook. So my grandma was a teacher for the Brooklyn Public School System. Mm-hmm. When she taught, that was one of her yearbooks that we used. And yes, that is my mouth superimposed over other people's faces, and, you know, how Austin, the man who made the video, chose which faces to use. I have no idea.
Gotcha. I was really questioning whether or not that could have been one of your yearbooks, because quite frankly, it looks like it came from maybe circa 78 through 81, somewhere in there.
That sounds like probably around when, maybe even a little before that, but no, that's not one of my yearbooks. I'm 35 years old. My high school yearbook was years 2003 to 7.
As I was wrapping up, I thought I was done. This is like the Godfather 3 thing, but they keep pulling me back in. You know, the Rainbow Wheel, as I was wrapping things up, Rainbow Wheel of Death was just on autoplay at that point. And so at some point I heard this phrase, quote, "I saw my future in the rearview mirror, and that ain't right." This is from the tune, "I Lived My Whole Life Last Night," which just by itself, my God, that phrase, that's incredibly deep, I think. And so, despite any other repeated phrasing or chorus, the phrase, "I saw my future in the rearview mirror, and that ain't right," that right there seemed to almost be the core of the song, or even the basis. Not necessarily what you wrote around, but that's the main thrust.
You know, I find myself writing about rearview mirrors a lot. It's definitely in a couple other songs. it's pretty ripe for metaphor, you know. It's like a mirror that lets you see behind you. It so clearly delineates time and space, you know, from what's in front of you and what's behind you, and that makes sense in that passing piece there too.
It's just one of many phrases that really catches my attention, and there were several actually from I Lived My Whole Life Last Night. But again, at that point, I thought I was wrapping things up, but I kept on hearing things that I felt had to be addressed somehow. It's been Music and Conversation from Dougie Poole to round out this edition of KVC Arts, going from a few different releases here. More at DougiePoole.com. That's DougiePoole. DougiePoole.com. And he has a performance in the region soon. That's at Scribble in Los Angeles. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Dougie Poole and earlier in the program, Garner Holt. Here at KVCR, thanks to Rick Dulock, Sandy Hodela, Zach Mays, Adam Rainey Ruiz, Joel Morales, Jessica Greenwell, Champ Chipman, Vanessa Wiarco, and Shireen Awad. Many past KVC Arts can be found through iTunes, NPR One, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts. Behind Us Now, for example, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet. So thanks to Sean as well. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support. Give any time of the year at kvcrnews.org/support. There you can set up a sustaining membership or give a one-time gift. You can make your support known to your public radio home, KVCR. Again, give any time of the year, day or night, at kvcrnews.org/support. And thanks again.